Good afternoon, everyone. The Oral Health section would like to welcome you to this session entitled Advances in Oral Health Communication, and we would like to invite you to become more involved in the Oral Health section. You can find the Oral Health section's web link on the APHA website, and you can also like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. For those of you seeking continuing education credit, APHA values the ability to provide continuing education credits to physicians, nurses, health educators, and those certified in public health at its annual meeting. All of our oral sessions are approved for CE. And lastly, we want to remind everyone to please turn off your cell phones and pagers. So in the interest of time, we'll go ahead and begin our presentation with Jesse Harrison-Noonan. Jesse currently serves as an assistant program manager at Pacific Center for Special Care, University of the Pacific Arthur A. Zucconi School of Dentistry in San Francisco, California. She works to improve awareness of barriers to and solutions for ensuring good oral health for underserved people amongst a variety of disciplines and levels. She is currently working on spreading the virtual dental home system of care through education, evaluation, and technical support expertise. We welcome Jesse.
Hello, everyone. First of all, I want to thank you for staying for the final breakout session. We have made it through a busy few days, so thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. I want to welcome you all. Again, my name is Jesse, and I want to talk to you guys a little bit about evaluation. So evaluation is something we do in many different settings every single day without even realizing it sometimes. So perhaps you've made that pro-con list, or perhaps you've done this in a more formal setting, perhaps a healthcare setting. For example, what I want to show you today is the virtual dental home model. So you guys may have had experiences before an evaluation, but what I want to do today is to show you a system of how to solicit feedback for a new and innovative model of care. Now, what is really important in this virtual dental home system, this telehealth model I'm going to talk to you about today, is a solicitation of an evaluation of the system, because in a new model of care, it is really important to solicit feedback, especially from a model that is based around patients, a patient-centered model. And so what we tried to do today, and what I will talk to you about, is a system that we developed and tested called the virtual dental home, and then also a system that we have to evaluate what patients think of this model. And this system was indeed successful when we evaluated it, the evaluation system. The patient satisfaction survey is important, and I think you guys should all pay attention to how we did achieve these results. We were able to receive a 30% return rate on these surveys of 542 patients received. So I want to go through some tips today. I hope you guys all have some information to take home with you of how we were able to receive those results on our patient body, and hopefully you can implement it in your settings too if you have the opportunity. First of all, I want to disclose that I don't have any personal or immediate family or financial relationships with the entities I'm presenting on today. What I want to go over today is I want to introduce a telehealth-enabled system called the virtual dental home. And I want to explain a model that we use to evaluate the system of this patient-centered model of care and how we ask patients what they think of this model. And I also want to tell you about how we survey this population, which is, again, a very unique population based on the population that this system is targeting. The virtual dental home was designed back in 2009 by Dr. Paul Blackman, who is sitting right here with the Pacific Center for Special Care. So it has been around for many years. And it's a system care that emphasizes technology to deliver oral health services. It functions by reaching into underserved populations and offering services, again, where people work, go to school, essentially their community settings. So it really works to bring this team to community settings for vulnerable and underserved populations who may not be able to access services in a typical setting for a variety of barriers based on their situation. The team definitely includes a variety of personnel, too, to make the system work. Allied dental professional is on a team, a dental navigator, and a dentist are the core people that build up this team. Here we have a virtual dental home concept map. And I realize there are a lot of bubbles here, so I want to walk you through these steps. The virtual dental home works to create a community-based oral health system that uses, again, the latest technology, as I was mentioning, to link practitioners in the community to dentists at remote sites. So what happens is the allied dental personnel goes and collects records in the community setting and then collects consent forms and then is able to take x-rays and post them online to a secure dental cloud-based system. The dentist then reviews the patient records information in the cloud-based system and is able to create a treatment plan for that patient. The allied dental personnel carries out the various aspects of the treatment plan that can be conducted in the community, providing oral health education, the exam, and the preventative care and simple restorations if needed. They are also able to provide case management, which, as we know, is very needed and kind of a unique concept. So there are multiple roles that the dental assistant, also called dental navigator in this role, is able to provide. And now again, you'll see if the dentist determines that the patient needs more restorative care than is able to be offered at the community site, the dentist is able to refer the patient to a dental clinic so they can actually see that person face-to-face if needed for that further restoration. And then the patient is able to be returned to the community to continue to have their regular visits. And again, the community, a location that is convenient for that patient. And what really happens is, yeah, the allied dental personnel help to reach these patients who might not otherwise access this system and offer as much care as they can and help achieve a greater dental home for these patients who might not have one identified, and again, better dental care for these patients. There are many diverse populations within this model. We've worked with, again, vulnerable and underserved populations in all settings. Elementary schools, our Head Start settings are one of our main settings now. Community residential facilities we also work with. Healthcare facilities, skilled nursing facilities. And we also reach into rural communities. And we have practiced in 13 project sites throughout Northern and Southern and Central California. The community site characteristics in the variety of settings that we serve in are, again, mostly low-income populations in all of those community settings. We have a lot of non-native English speakers, again, on that 30% return rate. 51% of those surveys came back from non-native English speakers. So that really attests to, again, a bit of success of this model for surveying and the number of people who access these services. Individuals with mental, physical, intellectual disabilities. We have a lot of transient populations in various elementary schools in California, so that could look like migrant farm workers is a good example of who that would be. And individuals overall who have access issues to accessing dental care and who typically the dental system has not worked or been able to access in the past. Again, the importance of evaluation, I think many of you guys know, and in your day-to-day work or your professional settings, evaluating really allows you to reflect and validate the strengths of a model that you have been practicing. And so if you have been doing something daily, if you have been doing a short-term project, a long-term project, it really offers validity, especially, I think, for this model in a telehealth-enabled system when it's a relatively new model. It helps show others what work has been done, and soliciting feedback from the patient, who is, again, the center of this model, is especially important and offers strong validity to this model. Now, so we did a patient satisfaction survey, and what we wanted to assess was what people think of the virtual dental home model. And typically you may think, okay, this is going to be a survey, perhaps maybe in SurveyMonkey. I know a lot of you guys have received surveys that way, or something mailed out to you or something in your email. But what you have to remember about this population is if they are low income and have difficulties accessing care, there are some other characteristics. Again, perhaps low literacy that you have to think about. And then you also have to think about other language barriers in these settings if there are non-native English speakers. So thinking about a lot of these, we had to think about what is the best way to gather information on patients' happiness with this model. Perhaps the traditional email is not a model that's going to be successful. So we had decided then in this situation that we were going to go with paper front and back, and that, although perhaps it may be viewed as a little old school in some people's minds, it was a more traditional model, but that was going to be the best for our patient population to ensure everyone was able to access that survey. We thought a lot about these prior considerations. There was a lot of discussion. We worked with an evaluation consultant in setting this up. We really wanted to identify main goals. So originally we had identified a long list of goals and information we wanted to get from this evaluation model. And it was really exciting, and we really were excited to ask all of these questions. But one of the things we realized is that it's going to be really hard to put a lot of information for this population on one survey. We really wanted to boil back down to the main questions, which is what we ended up going back to at the end. So, you know, in the middle of draft 8 or 9, we had crossed out any questions that did not relate to our main goal, which was assessing patient satisfaction and if they were or were not happy with the model and why or why not. And we considered, and we did, customize the methodology. So in our elementary and Head Start sites, we went ahead and we hosted health advisory meetings with the teachers to help educate them on the survey. We did language barrier interviews. So we did interviews at our Head Start and our elementary school sites to discuss what languages are spoken at your site, what translation mechanisms you have that have been established, and how are you going to help these patients fill out the survey but still ensure confidentiality and HIPAA within these surveys so that ensure patients are not feeling biased or pressured. And so we really worked hard. We had language identifiers for every single patient to determine what language, and then their surveys were customized accordingly. And we determined English and Spanish were the top languages, so we ended up with a two-sided survey, English on one side and Spanish on the other. We also had to consider a lot about budget. So the budget, I think it can be easy to get really excited, and you know, if you're doing a SurveyMonkey survey, for example, that the budget can be lower. But if you're looking to mail surveys to every person's house, especially if it's a transient population, you may be looking at cost of multiple letters being sent out, multiple postage costs, etc. And so that's something that I think can sometimes be overlooked in this age of technology, but it's also very important to think about any staff time, any staff incentives that you might want to build in for the person who is able to get the most surveys back if you're having the surveys delivered to a point person at a community site, or anything like that to kind of motivate and, of course, ensure that your results are not biased in any way, but motivate people in those community sites who are really your ambassadors if you're doing a remote project of any sort. You also want to look at your timeline, and again, that goes back to being realistic with your goals. So if you're really focusing on 1 to 3 goals, and perhaps you have a short timeline, you want to publish these results, you want to share them at a board directors meeting, it's really important to remember that timeline and work your way back, because I guarantee you it will take more time to refine the questions and perhaps adapt your methodology as you go through. Also, staff capacity. So chances are many people who are doing this, if it's you guys or someone else, maybe you've overseen someone who's doing this, has many other roles and many other hats they're wearing. So again, it's really important to think about and be realistic with these logistics, because if you're, again, looking to ask too many questions, etc., you may not be able to get clean data or target the populations as you wish you could have. Also, you have to consider prior logistics, and literacy is another one of those. So considering that most of the population has a 6th grade reading level, and so thinking about that, so using perhaps a test group to determine what the literacy level is, or looking to see other factors or other surveys that have maybe been published in your area that could help determine. But chances are, if you are able to read it, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 times and understand it, that's great, but then you're going to have a lot more difficulty. So I would recommend a focus group even for this type of thing. As we found, I know we put out a few different versions, and even some of the terms that you're just embedded with and, you know, use every day in your work is not something that's going to be familiar, especially if you're looking at a retroactive survey, as we were. So these may be terms that people haven't had to think about for a long time. We also, in literacy, we had identified that we had approximately 30 different languages that were spoken at across all of our sites. So that is a lot. And it's identifying perhaps people are able to speak their native language, but that does not capture on many forums. You have no idea if they're able to read in their native language. And so it's, again, really important that although they have this box checked, although you're the admin person at maybe a school or Head Start site has indicated that, you really need to consider that option as well. Again, so the virtual dental home survey, as I mentioned, 542 patients were surveyed over 2012-2013, and the surveys were distributed to 8 different community sites. And very simple, we had 5 to 8 questions regarding the satisfaction of the virtual dental home. And again, we were able to get a 30% response rate, which I think is something, you know, pretty admirable. And if you guys want to look more at those results than the numbers and the satisfaction of the model, that is available on our website, because I think that was really interesting and offers a lot of learning opportunity as well. But I think what is important is to think about this methodology and decide on maybe a goal percentage and figure out, work your way backwards, how you might go about doing that for your patients. There were a lot of things that I really think worked well as we had discussed, really offering the support based on identified need. So maybe if a site, for example, had 5 other initiatives going on and then another community site only had 3 initiatives for a grant they were working on, we really fluxed the methodology for each of those personal sites, talked to each level. As you saw in the virtual dental home map, there are many levels. So we really tried to talk to each level to determine what their capacity was to help with this survey and support us and customize those. And again, we decreased the literacy as much as possible just to ensure it wouldn't skew our results. And we, again, customized distribution methods by site. So we had patient exit interviews happening at Head Start, and so there was data being collected there for people who maybe needed some more language, some reading support. And then if people wanted them by mail, and some sites said, yes, my population responds well towards mailing, that also worked. So we really customized it. Again, like I mentioned, pilot your survey is the best idea. Refine your protocols then before you have sent out a lot of surveys with kind of, you know, a hope and a prayer that you're going to be able to get a percentage that offers some indication as to the questions, the main goals that you had identified. Really thinking about the communication methods and the language and soliciting stakeholder engagement. So, again, those incentives. Encourage discussion at those sites. Bring people in, because chances are your community sites are as excited to hear these results and hear what the families are thinking of this model that they have been supporting for you as you are. And so make sure to brag about other sites. Get excited about it. That is really the way to go. And, you know, in conclusion, I want to say I think sometimes surveys can seem like a lot of work and step by step, but I really think that if you take the time, identify a solid protocol, and follow some of these steps, you can ensure a successful survey, even on populations that perhaps seem harder to survey or more challenging based on their barriers. Thank you.